This is the Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
I welcome you to this episode introducing the German language journal for critical urban research called Superbahn. My name is Markus Kipp, and I hand over to my colleague Ross Beveridge, who had a conversation with two members of the editorial collective of the journal, Carla Nettelblatt and Nina Kriebert. The occasion for that conversation was the 10th anniversary of that journal, and the conversation touches on issues such as why it is important for the journal to publish in German, how the editorial collective organizes itself horizontally, the open access strategy of the journal, and finally also its relationship to political debates and struggles of the current moment. It is the first part of a series of episodes introducing and discussing a variety of publication outlets and discussion fora for urban research and action in different geographical contexts. And now over to you, Ross.
It's 10 years birthday of Superbahn this year. So it was the reason for the occasion for the interview made us think it would be really interesting to talk to you guys about why the journal was set up, what you've achieved and these kind of things, because we obviously read it and we're fans of it. We know what Superbahn does. But of course, lots of people outside of Germany and German-speaking countries won't know it, of course. So and we had this idea that it'd be very interesting to hear from non-English-speaking outlets that are contributing to urban studies and political debates in cities. So if we go back, if we rewind back 10 years to the beginning, what was the context? You know, we think about the German context then, and what prompted you to set up Superbahn?
Yeah. So some of us were part of the critical geography group in meeting regularly in Kreuzberg, and within this group we started a conversation that somehow in the German-speaking academia at the time, urban studies or critical urban studies was a little bit of a dispersed kind of affair. Like, there was not really a dedicated journal to urban studies or to critical urban studies at the time, and that would also integrate like different disciplinary perspectives. So the German debate at the time, and also the critical debate at the time, was somehow very dispersed in like different disciplinary journals. So what we wanted to set up was like a more or less a forum to have more interdisciplinary debates, and also to really provide like a forum for critical urban studies to come together in the German-speaking world. I think we were also a little bit like maybe frustrated that there were so many options at the time already, like in the Anglophone world, and like some of us had also been to some exchanges to this world, or visited like conferences, and we were a bit frustrated that we didn't have an option like this.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there 10 years ago, so it's very hard for me to answer that question. But I think from what I've heard and also read in Superbahn is that I think maybe a second dimension or a second reason for founding the journal was to also engage a dialogue or start a conversation with that more interdisciplinary English-speaking discussions that were going on, literatures that were going on at the time, because I think there was a kind of feeling that that was very much not part of the German-speaking discussion at the time, no? So there was, like, I think, maybe quite a close discussion in sociology that would then sometimes maybe address urban issues, but maybe more on the side. And then there was discussions and planning that were happening on like very German topics, but both in terms of, I think, themes and topics, but also in terms of like conceptual and theoretical perspectives on the issues that were discussed, we felt like there wasn't, it was, I mean, I wasn't there, so I can't say we felt like, but I think there was a bit of a need to open up that space to also more international debates. Yeah.
But maybe one point to add, we really thought it was also a very important thing to have a German language journal, to have like the opportunity to also expand upon the Anglophone discussions, because I think some of us had made the experiences that the topics we were looking at, in order to really place them into like an Anglophone setting, you would have to also, invest quite a bit to make them relevant somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think that this form of translating somehow between like the very particular context that you might be doing your research in and like a so-called international audience or an international debate, I think there's like you also lose bits in this translation process. And I think that we were interested in also creating like a German language forum in order to address this, but not to like close ourselves off in any ways, but to also have a possibility to address our concerns, more or less.
Mm. And I think, just to briefly add one more point that I think seems relevant, is that the way I perceive it was that is that there was also always already a very sort of conscious like self-positioning positionality that was very critical of. I mean, in the Suburban collective, that was very critical of the like English speaking hegemony in urban studies as well. And I think that was a big motivation to say, you know, it's going to be a German speaking journal. And I think what was there from the start, and I think what is very, very beautiful about it, is that there was always an effort and still is to also translate urban studies literatures from other contexts, so not just from the English speaking world, but also from Brazil, and I think there's Spanish texts that we always French, Russian, I think even one. So I think that's an important point to add.
I was wondering if you said a little bit more about the what it means to have this critical urban studies tradition in the German language. So what difference does a language make, you know, especially, you know, you talked about all these different inputs, you know, taking from other places, not just the Anglo-American debates, but if you think about the dominance of those debates, you think you have to translate them into a German context, or you might not want to translate them to a certain extent. There might be things that aren't translatable. What difference does the context of Germany make? That could be, it might be empirical, it might be the tradition of critical thinking, or the, you know, what's the tradition of urban thought in Germany? You know, you talked a little bit about the context at the time. You know, there's a bit in sociology, a bit in planning, but are you tapping into a wider tradition there in sort of German sort of Wissenschaft, you know, in science? And what difference do you think that language makes as well, you know, in terms of, because I mean, it does make a difference. And I wondered if you could just sort of talk about how you think about that, how you position the journal then and maybe ongoing since then.
Matuma, you go. I don't know, it's really hard.
Difficult question.
It's a difficult one, yeah. But
Hmm.
I mean, maybe I find a starting point in saying that we didn't really have like a tradition that we wanted to continue or something like this. Like, we didn't come from critical theory or something like this, and we came from all sorts of different angles, and we always kind of thought that it was also a benefit to bring them together and to kind of create like a journal where you could address different concerns as long as they were critical in terms of like social relations and of power relations, inequalities, etc. Like, I mean, that sounds extremely vague now, but somehow like there wasn't like this clear thing that we thought like, okay, yeah, us here in Germany, we have like a wonderful kind of heritage, maybe even. Like, we didn't really have anything like this. I mean, we did have like, of course, a few texts, like when you go back to like Häusermann and Siebel, for instance. Like, we do have a category where we have like old texts read anew or something like this. And of course we have some German texts in there, but we also have other texts in there that we found were like really interesting. Yeah, so we don't really have that kind of trajectory. We had the feeling somehow in terms of writing style, and I mean, this is not kind of super closely related, but I think there is something that German science was also kind of like, the argument is often developed in a fairly different way, mm-hmm. somehow. Like in a lot of like the German science, like, it's not written in this very argument oriented way like the that has developed in the Anglophone world, I think. And I think we were inspired by this in terms of how the articles are structured. Like, I think in that respect, I think we do have more we take a little bit our it's more connected to that. Like, I'm not sure if that makes sense.
I think that's an interesting point you raise, that kind of already addresses the sort of nitty-gritty, what is a good text for us, or like what are the contributions we're looking at in terms of like the craft or the like the very tool of writing. But just to go back to your question, I think you are absolutely right, Nina, that there was no tradition of critical urban thought in Germany, or still, you know, I think it's in its infancy. And I think that gap was part of the motivation or the reason to found a journal like Suburban, really.
I just thought we should probably say a bit more about what the journal does. I know the journal, but so what? Thinking now, what does the journal do? How would you describe it? All the bits and pieces that you have different sections, and if someone who can't read German and wants to know what Suburban is doing, how would you describe it? This main kind of content. In an average Suburban issue?
Well, we are an online open access journal, which is very important to us. We publish twice a year, three issues, 2 to 3 issues, depending on submissions we get. And we have different sections in the journal. So there's a sort of like traditional article sections that sees peer-reviewed articles, sometimes curated around a theme, like a specific topic that we suggest, sometimes with an external editor, curator, so like a person that sort of like approaches us with an idea, but also random collections of articles that sort of find their way to us. We also have three other sections, one called Magazin, which is a more sort of, publishes shorter texts that are a bit more, they're not peer-reviewed and a bit more creative in terms of style, but can also include photography, for example. That is a section that is very important to us. Then we have the Debatte section, which I think is quite a suburban thing, if you will, where we usually have authors suggesting or proposing sometimes rather controversial thesis, and then we invite a group of authors to respond to that claim and through that try and sort of spark a debate that, yeah, I think that often works very well and is I think readers enjoy reading. And then we have a book review section. That's it.
I think maybe the debate format, just to explain that a bit further, like we sometimes work with like an old text or something like this and let some people comment on it from today's perspective. Sometimes we do have like an initial text that someone submits that is suitable for something like this because it's a bit controversial. Sometimes we do talks in it, like that has also happened and also worked pretty well. So it's a bit of an open format, and it is actually quite successful in that we hear that it's often used in teaching, actually. People like to use it in teaching because it's really... I think it shows that you can have different perspectives on issues that, and that like critical urban studies is also a fairly diverse field with very different conceptual approaches, methodological approaches, and with also a lot of debate between. And I think that that's something that we try to also address in the journal, like it's this diversity. Like we are not a kind of critical studies equals political economy approaches journal. We do try to address like more diverse perspectives.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you about that. But one question before that, just in terms of. The money, the financing, you know, that's a big thing for these kind of ventures. How do you finance Suburban? And what about the editorial board? I mean, is anyone receiving a salary or half a salary? I mean, is it all sort of coming out of your own sort of time budgets? How does it work? How many people are on the editorial board? You know, how do you keep it going? It's presumably very tricky.
Suburban works as a collective. There's 15 of it at the moment, which I think is important to mention. And we all do this we don't get paid. Some of us, I don't know, have contracts that allow for Suburban to take place during work hours. Most of us don't. Is this correct? Yeah. And we have, at the moment, funding through the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, DFG, which is also running out, though, so it's very precarious, but Nina is going to say more about this in a second, which allows for one secretary person that gets paid and that sort of takes or like looks after the sort of like everyday logistics of the admin stuff exactly. Yep.
But we've only had this person since our last round of DFG funding. Like, so for a long time, we really operated completely on a voluntary basis in that sense. We've always paid, like, obviously our proofreading and, like, also the layout, like, someone who's doing the layout. So this was, like, always expenses that we've had. And the last DFG funding allowed us to get support on, like, all the organizational issues and also increasingly also on a demanding technical issues, because we do use like an open journal system,
OJS.
Yeah, OJS, open journal systems software to publish it. And it's, I mean, it sounds as if like the software is just there and you use it, but it's far more complex than that. And Michael has been like a really great help in making that run much better and also making our like processes that are quite complex run much smoother. In terms of finances, we did have two rounds of DFG funding. So the German Science Foundation, or how are they called in? Science Foundation, like they do try to invest a bit in creating like an open access publication network in Germany. So we've put in applications to receive funding through two of those streams, and that has been very helpful over the last years. And we've also now, like, we are organized as a Verein, like as an association, basically. So we can receive donations, and we do have some supporting members who also pay like a monthly fee. Or they are not really subscribers because we are open access, so everyone can read us without paying for it. We did have like a little perk for people who donate above a certain fee per year, like they get like a print version. So we don't really exist in print, but we do produce some print for those who are like our Fördermitglieder, our supportive members. Yeah, so we have supporters, they do that. And we also, for those authors who are in an institution that has institutional money to fund open access publications, we do also charge publication fees. For authors who don't have this, we still publish it for free, obviously. So we try to kind of make the journal accessible both for readers and also those authors. And it's always been like a mixed funding, but the DFG funding has helped a lot. In the future now, or right now, we are super happy that we won't charge any publication fees any longer, because we've joined like another consortium that is trying to get all the university libraries and research institute libraries to join funds. So they are creating a pot of money that then hands out that money to journals who have certain, who are part of their network. So a network has founded it, we are part of it. And for the next 3 years, we'll receive funds through that channel, won't charge any publication costs any longer. So it's even... I think it's a fantastic solution, like, and it's been quite some work to set it up, but we hope that this is kind of the future of open access journals like ours. So complex, yeah.
Yeah, but it's good that there's hope for this kind of project, even if it's always a little bit uncertain. So maybe we can talk a little bit about the content. We touched on it. You know, you said there are 15 of you. You know, a question that we had was, you know, what does critical urban studies mean? You know, in this German context, according to Silberbahn. You don't have a one kind of school of thought on the editorial board. So could you say a little bit more about what you try to do there? Do you have a strategy for dealing with the different debates? Or do the editors reflect the diversity of debates? Do you think about that when you invite people? Do you spend the whole time having massive arguments about what urban theory is, or you know, are the political economy people fighting with the kind of the post-structuralists, or how does it work? You know, especially in terms of pooling content together. You know, I don't know who wants to.
I just wanted to add one more thing about the editorial board, which I think I forgot to say, is that what I think makes the collective very special is, you know, there's 15 of us, and the way I think we're organized is very non-hierarchical, or it is for sure, both in terms of like institutional affiliation. So there's people with professorships and people who've just handed in their PhDs like me, and we all work in like very democratic structures, taking decisions together, meeting once a month, investing a lot of time in, yeah, curating the journal and working together, and like being very deliberate about the fact that this is something that is very important to us. And even though, you know, taking we're very conscious of the fact that the decision to like work in a collective means investing a lot of time that sometimes we don't have, but that is something that I think is very crucial, or is I think a very essential part of how we work, and is something that we want to continue. You know, like sometimes we meet every second Friday a month, and like sometimes our, I don't know, meetings, they last for hours and hours, and we really take time to discuss, I don't know, like even just like one article at length and in depth, and I think that's quite unique. Mm-hmm. And from that then stems discussions on different topics and themes. I don't know if you want to make a start on that.
Yeah, I can make a start on like the difficult question on what constitutes like critical studies. Like, I mean, I already said that we do try to reflect like the diversity of critical urban studies in many ways. So we do consciously try to bring in different voices into the debate and also into our editorial collective. So if we feel we need more people, we really think on who could join us. So we are not like, ending up as a bunch of researchers all addressing like duh, 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 all the same things. So in a topical sense, like also looking at what people actually research, but also in terms of approaches, we are trying to kind of have some diversity in our group, as difficult as it is also. And in terms of big conflicts, like I think in some ways, like at least, I mean, I haven't been as involved as you in the last 2 years because I had a child, like he's pretty young now. So that's why there's quite a few Suburban babies, and we also like we work as an as a collective. So sometimes people also step back for a time. So Yeah, I mean, as far as I see it, I think we are kind of appreciative to what different perspectives can bring to the table, kind of. And that makes us a little bit non-exclusive and not so super conflictual. So I don't think that any of us really thinks like this is like, I don't know, a school of thought that's kind of the best and needs to be there all the time and is better than all the rest. Like, I mean, we're appreciative that different schools of thought can address different aspects of critical urban thought, and that's kind of useful to also have to provide space for in the journal. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's something we're proud of, no? This like heterogeneous set of perspectives, and maybe just to give our listeners an idea of like themes and topics that were part of our last issues. We had one on feminist and queer analysis of the city. One on emotions in the city, another one on childhood in the city, which was interesting, and people thought was very was quite unusual maybe, but also there's always, and I think quite regularly over the past years, issues on methods of like critical urban studies, and that also connected to knowledge production and what it means to be a critical urban researcher. So there's definitely, I think, that dimension that we also like to see in the journal of, I don't know, just to have to sort of like reflect on our own ways of knowing. I think, you know, there's issues sometimes that have a bit more of like a political economic lens on, say, housing, but then there's also, you know, those that look at everyday gardening practices. I mean, you know, I think it's not mutually exclusive. I think we benefit from that variety. Yeah.
Maybe another really impossible question to answer. But so, what's the hook that holds everything together? You know, what's the critical part? You know, something Marcus and I, and I'm sure lots of researchers are always, not always, but sometimes asking themselves. And we think about it in terms of the content in the podcast sometimes, you know. What does it really mean? I mean, often you can just, if you're reading an article, I suppose if you get an article and someone sends it, you can sense it if it's sort of critical urban studies, but how would you really you recognize it? You know, if the school isn't, if the strand isn't important, what's the thing that makes it part of that category of critical urban studies?
We should really be able to answer this question, but it's such a tough one, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe a starting point would be to reflect a bit more generally on the sort of like academic system we find ourselves in. I mean, I think compared to, say, US American or that sort of like UK context, I think German, like urban studies generally in Germany, but critical urban studies in particular, still hold a very minor space at in academic institutions, which I think mirrors in the fact that there's very few, if any, professorships on like interdisciplinary urban studies in Germany. Not very many, and so the idea to connect critical thought with empirical research on the urban, whatever we define it as, I think is something that is that is not very developed, and I think is a contrast to, say, geography schools in the UK, where, you know, like everyone reads Marx or the post-structuralists. That synergy is simply non-existent. Same with planning. It's very technical. It's very, like, you know, close to engineering. And so I think that conversation between critical thought and just the social science generally and the more sort of like built environment disciplines is something, you know, like, I don't want to like make grass generalizations, but it's something that happens very rarely within the German academic system. And I think this is our starting point, and it's probably like a very dull definition, but this is how I would see it.
I mean, I think we had like over the years, we also had discussions about this again and again, and we have these discussions when we look at our articles also, like, what is the critical angle in this at all? And I think in the beginning we had some agreement that it should be like gesellschaftskritisch in some ways, like for processes of marginalization, of inequalities, for power, etc., etc. So we're interested in articles that address either the manifestations of inequalities and marginalization processes that address power relations or power structures. But I think it's fairly broad in many ways. And I mean, when you talk about like also, yeah, the non-sexist city, for instance, you can talk about issues of racism, of diversity. I think you can pick your battles, kind of. Like, I mean, there's a lot to be discussed, and it's fairly broad in some sense, but like one of these issues I think needs to be addressed in an article in our journal somehow.
Can I just, I mean, this is in German, but can I just read it from like
course,
the 2012 sort of position paper manifesto? Unseres Erachtens muss kritische Forschung über eine negative Dialektik hinausgehen, indem sie nicht einfach das Bestehende kritisiert, sondern das im Entstehen Begriffene positiv hervorhebt, respektive die konkreten Potenziale für gesellschaftliche Veränderungen bestärkt und affirmiert. I think this is what I wanted to say, is that, and I think we haven't talked about this, but that we try and every now and then also have contributions by activists. So for example, we had several pieces on Deutsche Wohnen und Co. enteignen the last years.
So this was the housing campaign,
the housing,
the remunicipalization, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, here in Berlin. And that is, I think, a connection or a bridge between academia and activism that is sometimes stronger and sometimes a bit weaker in the issues we publish. But I think that's an important part of the answer to your question.
Yeah,
also
that was another part of my question actually, but
yeah,
you can maybe go on to that, because that's another thing where we think about. We certainly set ourselves the mission in the podcast of connecting research with activism and politics. We're aware we haven't really managed that. We've had some activist guests, but somehow it just works in the way that it becomes more of an urban research podcast. We want to change that. We wanted to ask you, I mean, how do you Do you guys deal with that? Because as you said, it's part of that critical aspect. But of course, it's more than that. It's praxis, isn't it? It's, how do you engage with kind of the urban world around you? And you mentioned you have had some contributions from activists. So maybe if you want to talk a bit about the theory and the practice and the difficulties of doing that.
I think our aspiration is that we do engage a lot also with social movements, with activists, etc. Realizing, of course, that people who are fighting all the battles in the real world are in most cases also super busy and working in very precarious situations that are most often even more precarious than the work situations in a German academia. So we know that we can't really expect activists to kind of fill our journal somehow. Like, I think none of us has the illusion that this would happen. And we've also made the experiences that it's sometimes not so easy to bring activists or social movements in conversation with, like, more theoretical debates. And that also needs to be done in a fairly careful manner, not to, I don't know, I mean, in one way, not to exploit people who are kind of whose primary concern is obviously not publishing in, like, a scientific journal. But at the same time, we also want to be relevant for people who are involved in movements, etc. And I think there's also, of course, often in many cases within these movements, you do also have academics that kind of engage. And I think
I think I would agree or like highlight the danger of exploiting activists or kind of, you know, like not using them as, yeah, anyway, basically all that you said. But what I actually want to say was that we even within our editorial board, we have examples of research activists that kind of, you know, are very active in both arenas. And I think that is quite a strong part of our DNA as well. People are very active in organizing around housing issues here in Berlin, but also anti-racism, for example. And that obviously shapes the way we work and sort of look at things we publish tremendously. Yeah. And then we also, I mean, not to like give this too much space, but we also sometimes see ourselves as a Sprachrohr or a platform for petitions or calls, open letters. We had one, for example, where we then just like use the infrastructure we have to like assemble people. For example, the beginning of COVID, there was an open letter on the responsibility or like the urgency of the housing sector to respond to homelessness, all these questions around housing that and sort of like inequalities there that gained an urgency during COVID and the isolations and so on. And I mean, I think going a bit away from this question around content like in the journal, I think the very fact that we operate as an open access online journal with all of us working for free is a bit of a political move, if you will, within the German academic system, no? Like there's this very strong sense of not wanting to be with a publisher, for example, like staying independent. Network, like, you know, creating a network, establishing a network with all these other open access journals in order to stay open access and to sort of like counter the hegemony of these like big publishers, you know, that take huge fees and are not very accessible at all.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a little bit about your impacts or and also your interactions with German academic community over the last 10 years. You know, how is, you've mentioned something with about journals, you've created this network, there's certainly being independent and being apart from that and being open access is I think it's a really big statement, and it is a strong move in the context of academic publishing, you know, that's so captured by these big publishers. But how has Suburban impacted on and interacted with German scientific communities? What kind of response has there been over the last 10 years?
It's always difficult to really say, like, oh yeah, this is exactly what we've done in some ways, or the impact that we've had. Like, we do have, I think we know that we are read and that our readership increases. We do know that it's also in different disciplines that we do have, like, the diversity that we want to address is kind of also in our readership. I think we are acknowledged as a serious journal, because I mean, when we all started out, like, we have a very hierarchical academic system in Germany, and at the time none of us had a professorship. So we were all like in lecturer positions, working in precarious contracts. And I think in our more hierarchical system, it is also a step to found a new journal from that position. And I think that's an important thing for us also, like in our non-hierarchical working ways, and to also keep this momentum, not to be too much within the institutions in some sense, like as we've existed now for this time. And I think in between we also thought, like, okay, if we then attach ourselves to like certain institutions, like maybe that would also work, but we consciously decided against it. How are we perceived? I mean, Gala has said before that there's not this huge surge of critical urban studies within German academia. Like, I think over the last 10 years it's probably grown, definitely. Like, I mean, it's super, like, it's really developed. And I think we do also have a part in it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think we're, like, super highly regarded by that community that is growing. But in the wider sense, like, also we're just a small pond in a large sea, maybe.
Yeah, quite niche, no, for sure. Still, Yeah, I think there's two dimensions. No, one is how have we developed as a collective, and there I think it the way I look at it, having joined just a couple of years ago now, is that it was a very empowering process. No, like in Germany, you would usually not have a bunch of lecturers that some of you guys had finished their PhDs, either had so to take that courage, if you will, to just say no, we see there is a need for an interdisciplinary urban studies journal, and so we're just gonna go for it, I think is very unique and super rare. You would usually have 5 professors sitting around a table being like, okay, let's come up with an idea for a new journal. I think that's how it would, that would be the usual mainstream way, and you guys just broke with that, and I think that was very brave and had a lot of momentum. No, and I think I would even dare say that I don't know, I guess it's an open question if that was an inspiration to others as well, to kind of just be like, hey, we don't have permanent contracts, but we have a voice nonetheless. And I think that is very inspiring to many early career researchers. It was to me anyway, for sure. And so that was the one thing. And then the other, it's so hard, it's very self-referential and really hard to say, but I would also agree that Superban probably played a big part in sort of the opening of the urban studies conversation the last 10 years. The fact that now, it's very common for students to read English-speaking papers, articles in class, the conversation has broadened for sure. And I think, I don't know, in my humble opinion, I think Superban was a part of that. I don't know.
Yes, we're already talking about it, but if you look over the last 10 years, what would you say were the main challenges, obstacles that you had to overcome? Obviously, financing is this constant problem. This is a big one. And alongside that, what have been the main achievements? What have been the real highlights of the last 10 things? Things that you think have really been great and good fun and had a real impact on sort of debates and as well.
I think the parties are usually quite good.
You have to tell them when the party is, plan their trip to Berlin.
No, yeah, there's no party lined up at the moment, unfortunately. But
we've had a lot of highlight issues, I suppose. Like we had
The children one
was a highlight, or the childhood one. We did have a fairly early one was on the post-political city. I think that was also a highlight. The planning as political practice for me is still a highlight, and many, many more. Like I think what we noticed, what remains to be difficult for us sometimes is to generate a lot of submissions that are of high quality. So I think that we have invested a lot of time in working with authors to kind of improve quality that of submissions. We've noticed that we do get more submissions if we do calls for paper. So we kind of ended up doing more and more themed issues over the years. Like in the beginning, we also had some open issues still. So I think that's it's also gotten better, I think. But we've had quite a few experiences also with submissions that have received bad reviews and that were never touched again, that kind of never made it into the journal. Our quote of acceptance, I think, is also not super high. Like, I think it's less than half that kind of make it. And some, I mean, most have like quite a few revisions in the end. There's not so many occasions that articles just fly through. So I think that that's kind of a process for us, and still an issue. But we also are sometimes surprised with like the responses to some topics instead of others. Like, I think that's kind of, yeah.
So which topics have been really, really sort of hot ones, and which ones have you thought were going to be really popular and just didn't really spark interest?
I remember having just joined in 2020, contribution in the debate section on East Germany and the role of urban research in East Germany was quite big, and we even had a public, Zoom event, like online Zoom event, where I think we had a lot of participants, and that was really interesting for people. So the question of like how to do research in Eastern Germany, and how, you know, like what are the limits also of like concepts and approaches developed in Western Germany, even mm-hmm. still today. So I think that had a lot of resonance, and also that I think earlier issue on like urban social movements with Margit Meyer and the debates around that, I think, is also something that people associate with Suburban or Think Back, or like I sometimes have people walk up to me and you know, they read that, and that's sort of like what they think of when they think of Suburban.
I think the experiences that we've had is if the topic is too broad or too specific, like, and it's sometimes a bit difficult to kind of strike the balance. And it's also sometimes a bit difficult to say like how many people are really working on certain topics, on certain concepts or so. The post-political city, as far as I know, or post-political urbanism, has received quite a lot of submissions back then. I mean, it's years ago, like it was one of our first issues. And then I think, as far as I know, shortly after, we had an issue on the police or on police work, and that was more complicated to receive as many submissions. So it's a bit like, I think for us, it's also not always so easy to predict.
So looking forward to end the interview, do you have plans for the coming years? Is there a strategy, or are there certain things in the pipeline? Do you have things up your sleeve for the next few years for Suburban? What's in store for your readers?
I mean, we just celebrated 10 years, which was very big for us this year, both with a special issue, but and also a new layout. Yeah. Both of our homepage and the print, the print version. I think, I don't know if that's like a plan, or rather a question mark. To me, for sure, is how we continue financing the journal. I think that's. I mean, the next 2 years with this Koala initiative that Nina talked about is going to be much easier. But, you know, still there's no continuous funding. So that's something that worries us a lot, or that, you know, like is just a never-ending story. How we continue working as a collective also, no, with like people, like, I don't know, every one's careers has developed a lot. You know, people have children, have professorships, and there's still so much that needs to be done for Suburban, but I think resources are very scarce. I mean, I think I didn't mention it before, but it's always two people, two editors reading, like reading and editing one text, and that takes a lot of time if you think about it. So how are we going to negotiate that in the future? I think it's also something to think about.
I think another issue that we've kind of discussed for quite a while is how we can maybe also broaden the media. Like, how can we include like also audio formats, and how can we really make use of our digital platform. I think we are also discussing like how can we, like sometimes we discuss it or regularly we discuss it again, like how can we kind of be relevant to the moment in some ways. And I mean that is, in most cases we kind of decide against it, like also when it goes according to what can you post here or there, or do we join like a certain petition or whatever. And in many cases we kind of decide against it because we don't really have the resources to do it, and we like the core things we do already take up quite a bit of time. So I mean, I think we do have aspirations to also include like audio formats and to kind of make the whole digital kind of world a bit more exciting. But that's like an open construction site, and we haven't really started addressing it. I mean, it would also be possible to include films and all sorts of things as an open access journal, but like, so far we haven't managed, but hopefully we'll manage at some point, because it would be also great. I think we do have right now we have a few issues in the pipeline that are coming that I think are also super exciting. And we are meeting, like, as a collective, we meet twice a year for, a retreat. And this is usually the occasions when we discuss, like, what do we do in the future, which topics are coming up. And we are going away today, so there's I think now that we've managed like to do our celebrations and the redesign and stuff like this, that's taken a lot of work, we'll address this now.
I think one thing or project on my mind that might be interesting for your listeners as well is that we are looking to connect with journals in other countries who do similar things. We thought about the Radical Housing Journal in the UK, for example, but also one in Milan in Italy, and to like look at, I don't know, an exchange, but also maybe possible projects we could do together collectively, like internationally, while keeping true to our, you know, like mission to broaden the German-speaking debate. I think that's something that many of us find very interesting, or is definitely something high up on the list. So do reach out if you hear.
Thank you both very much. That was excellent and really illuminating. So everyone listening to the podcast should learn German, and so they can read Suburban. We'd certainly encourage them to do that. It'll take you a while, perhaps, but it's certainly worth it if you can then read Suburban. So thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for listening.
For more information, visit our website urbanpolitical.podigy.io.
Please subscribe and follow us on Twitter